Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, an out-of-the-box think tank about community sovereignty and regenerative economics. We look at how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. We present a people's history of the Bible and a parent's view on how to raise giving kids in a taking world. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz, WHCL Hamilton College, Radio Lillooet, British Columbia, and Upstart Radio Online.
I love this place enough to have no doubt. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to the 36th episode of Third Paradigm, entitled People Are Animals Too. I've wished that I had a bumper sticker that said this. I think it would make at least as much sense as the local favorite, I like dogs and I vote. The point that I'd like to make is that being a vegan animal rights activist in hemp sandals isn't necessarily a more ethical choice than being a chain-smoking, beer-guzzling carnivore. Ethics, like the devil, is in the details. It's in the direction you're going, what you're moving towards, and what you're moving away from. When I ask people why they're vegetarians, they seem startled that anyone would have to ask. Isn't it obvious? Meat causes suffering and cruelty. Plus, it's terrible for the environment, and by eating lower on the food chain, we could feed the world. These answers are true for industrial animal farming, but they're just as true for industrial ag. It causes suffering and cruelty to humans. It's ruining the environment, and the food diverted into export crops, processed carbohydrates, and vegetable oils could feed the world. Last week, I had the interesting juxtaposition of interviewing both ends of the meat production spectrum. I started with Novella Carpenter, the sassy, in-your-face author of Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer. In an abandoned lot in inner-city Oakland, she's raised vegetable beds, bees, chickens, geese, ducks, turkeys, rabbits, goats, and even two pigs, which she fed entirely by dumpster diving. She likes to farm where she can get a shot of tequila and Thai takeout in walking distance. At the opposite end of the spectrum, another free radio programmer invited me to co-interview Elise Perlstein. She's the co-producer of Food Inc., the wide-ranging documentary that shows what vegans and carnivores alike should be opposing. Nicolette Hahn-Nyman, who I interviewed in my episode Love 'Em and Eat 'Em, was a key advisor to the film. It covers poultry and hog containment facilities, Monsanto's ruthless attacks on farmers and seed cleaners, the link between poverty and obesity, and the treatment of immigrant workers. My daughter Veronica watched it with me and said that she'll never look at food again without wondering where it came from. She described it as factual without getting bogged down and deeply disturbing without being overwhelming. After raising chicks ourselves, watching them tumbled by the thousands down a conveyor belt broke her heart, along with the chickens overdeveloped for breast meat that can't walk two steps without collapsing. But the only actual slaughter they show is the farmer who's doing it right, processing dozens of chickens out in the open air. That part didn't bother her. That's my girl. We'll look at these, plus two ironweed films called Asparagus and A Growing Season, and at a mitzvah to save the planet. But first, we'll read a poem by Wendell Berry called Manifesto, The Mad Farmer Liberation Front. The music is Set Me Free by Paul Taylor. Manifesto, The Mad Farmer Liberation Front. Love the quick profit, the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched in a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. When they want you to die for profit, they will let you know. So friends, every day, do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into the mold. Call that prophet. Prophecy such returns. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of the songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. So long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? Go with your love to the fields. Lie down in the shade. Rest your head in her lap. Swear allegiance to what is nighest your thoughts. As soon as the generals and the politicos can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. Leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection. That was the Mad Farmer's Liberation Front Manifesto by Wendell Berry, to the music of Set Me Free from Paul Taylor's 1995 CD, On the Horn. Farming was also the topic of this month's Ironweed, in 2 featured documentaries called Asparagus and A Growing Season. Ironweed is a progressive film club that sends out 1 DVD each month with movies, cartoons, and short videos. Asparagus focused on a town in Michigan called the Asparagus Capital until U.S. foreign aid started subsidizing asparagus in Peru. The movie shows how Oceana County elected a Mrs. Asparagus, put on parades, developed microwave asparagus, lobbied their representatives, and targeted novelty markets. The town's residents are likable, hardworking, and creative. Still, there's no way that thousands of union workers can compete with cheap third-world labor. But my friend David Bayer has the other half of the story. For the last 30 years, he's lived in the Ica Valley of Peru, where the asparagus moved to, thanks to $60 million a year of our tax money under the auspices of the so-called war on drugs. In addition to the lives it's broken here, farm workers there are paid less than the cost of a breadbasket, which is how global aid organizations determine the minimum amount of food needed for a family. Most are single mothers living with their children in makeshift huts. Every few years, the rain causes devastating mudslides into the valley because of the deforestation of the surrounding mountains. I got to know David because I did a fundraiser for the fledgling forest he's replanted on the hills. He's also an agroecologist who writes about how asparagus and table grapes, both water-intensive crops, are dropping the aquifers by several meters a year. Within the next decade, the area will face severe drought and starvation because of it. Thank you, Uncle Sam. The other film, A Growing Season, follows Ontario farmer John Gorzo from spring planting through fall harvest. He plants organic crops, sells to the farmers' markets and to agribusiness, capitalizing on the organic market. He builds good housing for his immigrant workers and pays a fair wage. He's smart, experienced, hardworking, and even sells property he's inherited to tide them over. but after dealing with unpredictable weather and globalized prices, he concludes that he'll have to find a regular job the next year. My husband thought this was one of the most depressing films he's seen, even though all that happens is a good man going broke. He should see the segment in Food Inc. when Monsanto goes after one of the few people still in the business of seed cleaning, which helps farmers to save their own seed. They subpoena his client list to make everyone who's ever used his services a target of Monsanto's lawyers, putting him out of business and making him a pariah to his community. In my interview with Elise Perlstein of Food Inc., I read a statement Monsanto gives on their corporate social responsibility. My husband's an alumnus of the University of Arizona. Their business school, Eller College of Management, puts out a magazine. In their ethics issue, they gave Monsanto the last word about being a positive force in the world, giving $15 to $25 million a year for science-based education and nutritional improvement through agriculture, and being recognized for their integrity and ethics. Barf bag, anyone? We'll now break for Cows with Guns by Dana Lyons.
Fat and docile, big and dumb. They look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be et at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew. No one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, cause the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. They crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darkening in the day. 12 burning McDonald's. Have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. The president said, enough is enough. These uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef.
Cows on buns.
The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay.
Cows outgunned.
The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers.
We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or dog.
Oh, oh.
Cows with guns.
That was Dana Lyons with Cows with Guns. You can hear a jukebox with all of Dana Lyons' great songs on politics and nature at cowswithguns.com. I'll be playing another Dana Lyons to end the show. We just did our third Food in the Hood, our front yard farmers market for Peru, Amazonians, and Hondurans. This time, we had two little girls who called themselves Nature's Friends. For quarter donations to environmental causes, they'd made bookmarkers, posters, and origami boxes where you can keep your notes on everything ecologically minded that you do. The boxes were 50 cents because they took them a really long time to make. For another quarter, you could get a charming handwritten lecture from them. They read, "Dear American citizen, our world is falling apart and we need every hand we can get to hold it up. Be green and plant flowers and trees. Go on a pickup trash walk. Be sure to wear gloves to do this. Most people say reduce, reuse, recycle, so take their advice. We hope you use our ideas to save the earth." At our next Food in the Hood, I'm hoping to bring them more customers, because everyone needs a good 10-year-old to boss them around. We also had a couple who described themselves as mostly vegans, but who eat eggs their hens lay, or pork and rabbit raised by friends, or chickens they've hatched that turn out to be roosters. Their food ethic is based on the particulars, how it's treated and how sustainable it is. It was refreshing to hear their practicality. I told them that someone had reported me to animal welfare because one of my menus included rabbit. When the animal welfare officer showed up unannounced, the bunnies were free foraging in the vegetable garden, chasing the chicks through the Brussels sprouts. Rabbit wrangling has become the family sport. It takes all five of us to corner Ninja Bunny especially. The lover bunnies had eloped next door to a six-foot-wide morning glory hedge they use as their honeymoon cottage. The Albert Einstein rooster was strutting his punk black and purple fro, dyed by the rooster booster we put on his bald spot to keep the other roosters from picking on him. The officer agreed that few pets had it so good and had no problem with what we're doing. But it feels weird to know that someone had alerted them. Let's examine this food ethic in the light of Food, Inc. I could be serving Foster Farm chickens, Smithfield hams, and Costco burgers at my fundraiser, like every other church, school, and nonprofit. My money would then reward those who perpetrate horribly inhumane living conditions and brutally inhumane killings. It would also be complicit in creating pandemic viral strains, aka swine or avian flu, which breed in these pits of close-quartered misery. If I did these things, causing a world of suffering to animals secondhand, I'd be a hero in my community, rather than being branded as a bunny killer. I asked my middle daughter why people don't join together in taking on the big issues. She said, because it's easier to go up against a neighbor than a multinational corporation. She has a point. Even though Food in the Hood hasn't sent any money yet, I can sense that it's helping. Rights Action posted photos of the thousands of people blocking roads, They're laughing and carrying signs, singing and playing drums, selling food and wearing ranch hats that say Mel on them. The women are under a sea of colorful umbrellas against the drizzle, and there's good energy. Mel Zelaya's family home had been taken over by the army. But on Friday, a crowd of 4,000 to 5,000 people marched to the house. The soldiers pulled back, and 2,000 people respectfully entered the property to keep it safe for his return. No one knows what will happen. Otto Reich, implicated in the Venezuela coup attempt, used U.S. influence to bring pressure against Zelaya. The special advisor to the coup government is Billy Hoya Almendola, whose name makes the blood of those who lived through the 80s freeze in their veins. His resume includes founding 2 death squads, at least 11 extrajudicial executions for certain, and kidnapping and torturing 6 students who had been staying with the attorney general's assistant, 4 of whom are still missing. He studied under Pinochet and under an Argentinian dictator known for child kidnappings. But this is all the more reason that Hondurans are determined not to let things slip backwards. Like people scaling the face of a sheer cliff, they know how long the fall is if they let go of each other. We'll break "For None of Us Are Free" by Solomon Burke and the Blind Boys of Alabama. Information Clearinghouse has an excellent contemporary video using this as a soundtrack, which is still unfortunately relevant.
And brothers, because if you do, you can hear their voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free, none of us are free. None of us are free, one of us are chained, none of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other, let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. It's a single truth we all need, just to hear and to see. None of us are free. Isn't too hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We've got to join together in spirit, heart, and mind, so that every soul who's suffering will know that we're not alone. Oh, none of us are free.
That was Solomon Burke with None of Us Are Free on his Don't Give Up on Me CD from Fat Possum Records. So how do we break our link in the collective chains keeping us from being free? Well, the answer, according to an article in Tycoon magazine, is to be a vegetarian. Daniel Brook is the author of The Planet-Saving Mitzvah, Why Jews Should Consider Vegetarianism. He writes, "Beyond being spiritual, We are called upon to lift up ourselves and make the world a better place for ourselves, our families, our communities, and others. Ever since working on a kibbutz in Israel, Daniel has been a vegetarian and gives 13 categorical imperatives on why it embodies Judaism's highest ideals. Before exploring vegetarianism, I'd like to question the idea that any religion has exclusive rights to higher ideals. I'm not just picking on Judaism. I had the same reaction when my parents wanted us to send our kids to Catholic schools to learn morality. If morals are worth their salt, they transcend all religions and are part of the superset. Salt, by the way, represented wisdom in the Gnostic vocabulary, which makes you wonder about Lot's wife turning into a pillar of salt while Lot steals his daughters off to a cave and impregnates them. Be that as it may, belief in moral superiority has been the rationale for every land grab and oppression of another culture. Someone once asked me rhetorically what was the root of all sin. I said sin was an acronym for seeing inferiority. Seeing oneself as superior in the eyes of God, often through discipline and rituals, makes it possible to commit atrocities. Hitler, for instance, was a vegetarian. In each of his 13 categorical imperatives, the examples Daniel gives are of factory farming. But I'd like to particularly take exception to number 3, the conservation of resources. Meat production, Daniel claims, is more wasteful and less efficient. In my forays into animal husbandry, nothing could be further from the truth. At the farmer's market today, I went dumpster diving, raiding the scrap boxes that the bunny rescue people hadn't beaten me to. In addition to carrot tops and Jerusalem artichokes, I also got potatoes and cabbages to go visit the pigs. It's impolite to arrive at a pig party empty-handed. Someone else's pig is being traded today in the form of pork for 3 Nubian goats. It has me wondering if I could have my own goat cappuccino machine, or whether this would push my fragile family over the edge. Next Saturday, Veronica and I are going to a beekeeping workshop at Love Apple Farm. In Novella Carpenter's talks, she recommends starting small and adding one new thing a year. Since November, I've started chickens, rabbits, vegetables, fruit trees, a radio show, and a front yard market, which I think counts as nuts. But it's such a beautifully efficient system that I'm determined never to have another useless plant, animal, or thing in my life. This has been Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm. Thanks and apologies to Novella Carpenter. My recorded interview with her was sabotaged again by my inner Luddite. Thanks to Janaea, who invited me to interview Elise Perlstein of Food Inc. on her show, Tickling the Belly of the Beast. This interview can be found on our Third Paradigm archives at radioforall.net. Responses can be sent to Teresa@thirdparadigm.org. Thanks to Skidmark Bob for production, music, and editing. We go out with another Dana Lyons, Berries Overgrown.
The September sun shining down on me through the hair that falls in my eyes. The reds and purples of the plum and apple trees, the golden grapes of autumn on the vine. In the kitchen there are chanterelles cooking the same as mom's back home, and our hands and legs are scratched from picking the berries over.